We got Chris Grosvenor. We got Ian Harrower. We got Julie Dorser. Even Glenn the Skateboarder. On the Pinballers Podcast. Coming to you from beautiful River Hivets, Nova Scotia.
Welcome back, Pinball Nerds, to episode 433 of your fifth favorite pinball podcast. My name is Orbital Albert, and on today's show, I'm going to be talking about the top five weird ways I learned to, well, I don't want to say become accurate, but maybe more accurate, slightly more accurate, because I've always been decent at nudging. I'm pretty good at figuring out, you know, how to get into multi-ball on a new machine and maybe not how to blow it up, but at least which shots are safest to get a decent score. However, I've never been very accurate until probably just in the last year and a half to 2 years, I'm starting to get a little bit better at accuracy. And I've got some weird, wild ways that I have achieved that, and I'd like to share those with you. Now, I will be telling you anyways about why I'm giving away a pinball machine at the end of the show. So stay tuned for that. But for now, as I mentioned on the last show, I'm going to try to jump right into a top five, and I'll save any going off topic for the end of the show when possible. You know me, I just can't help myself sometimes. All right, so number one on this list, and a couple of these, I mean, most of these are things that I think other people do. It's something I've never talked about with other people. And maybe one or two of these, but the first one is sighting. I do this all the time, and I find sighting tremendously helpful when I am shooting a brand new pinball machine, especially if I'm in a tournament and I have to do well. And sighting I like to do, honestly, before I even pull the plunger, and I take a look and I guesstimate from the flipper which direction I've got to go to hit the most important shots. And you'll see me getting low and taking a look kind of from that level. But that's not when I do it most. I might do that like for 30 seconds. You know, I don't do it for 10 minutes right before. I don't inspect the machine forever before I go to play it. But what I do is while I'm cradled up, people who have played with me have seen me kind of probably get lower and look at you know, from... Basically, what you're doing is you're getting lower to get a better eye view of what you're going to be aiming at and where on the flipper you should be hitting the button to cause the ball to go there. So I Googled this because where did I get this from? I started doing this because I frequently did it in pool. And I used to be in a league where I played a lot of pool. Growing up, my Oma and Opa always had a snooker table. And so I was playing there all the time from being a little kid. And it was such a giant snooker table, like a full-size one, that I remember them saying that when they were going to sell the house, they had to sell it with it because it was built in the basement and there was probably no way they could get it out of there. But the reason, so I put into Google, why do pool players get so low to the pool table when shooting? It says the reason for this is that the view from a crouched perspective inside the triangle, the overall distance will vary from shot to shot, but the distance your eyes have to travel will always be diminished as you move closer to your cue. Over the course of time, this can be a huge advantage. So if you're cradled up and you can glance, you can get really low and you can see exactly where the shot is in perspective to your flipper and where you're going to have to shoot it off the flipper, this will allow you, especially for a really important shot. I don't know if Keith Elwin does it, but I have seen a couple times it looked like he kind of gets low to get a better perspective. And I'm sure I've seen a couple other players do this when they're cradled up. But it's not something I've ever talked about with other people. It's something I probably do more when I'm playing alone than I will be in a tournament because I don't want people to be like, what's he doing? But if I get really into it or it's a really important shot and you see me bent over on a machine when we're playing in a tournament in the future, you'll know I'm getting a little better sight on it. Okay. So the next one is percentages. This one I don't think anyone does, or maybe someone does. Message me at pinballnerds@gmail.com if you happen to do it. But this particular one is really interesting. I kind of am a big numbers guy. I was probably the only nerd in class who got excited for math class. Now, there was certain, I didn't like memorizing formulas, but I liked doing problematic math where, like, Sally has $1,500. Sally wants 5 pinball machines. The average pinball machine price she can get is $3,000, but she also wants Jurassic Park for $6,500. So what's the average price of the other pinball machines has to be now? For, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. And that, you know, that's probably, you know, I'm making this sound simplistic, but I'm just absolutely in love with numbers. I like nerding out about numbers. That's why I do so many top 5 lists. That's why I think of everything in numbers or percentages, and the flipper is no different. So I like to know on the flipper. Now this can happen in a tournament and when I'm playing on a machine for the first time, but usually this is more likely to happen at a friend's house, at my house, at a local arcade I play on a machine very often on. I like to know percentages. I start by breaking the flipper down to 50%. That's the very first one. So if I need to know where an important shot is, and it appears to be in the middle one third of the LON. Oh, LON, relax. It's just someone getting a delivery. Sorry, guys. Luna is getting a little excited because we have a package coming in probably from Christmas. But I like to break the flipper down into like a 50% barrier and know that the, you know, like, so if I'm taking the shot, it's on the first half of the flipper, the last half. I think a lot of people do that. But then I break it down one more to 25%. And then to break it down just a little bit more, you need to know there's some shots, say, for instance, that you backhand that you would hit at the 50% mark from a cradle, but you'd only hit it 25% to backhand it while the ball was on the fly, especially if it was coming quick going down the in lane. Right? So I like breaking everything down into percentages. That's part of what I like to do. So yes, I might know for a certain particular shot. So, I mean, a good, for instance, is if I'm thinking of my left flipper on Fireball Classic, which I actually managed to get 7.3 million on or 7.2 million. According to Pindigo, it's the highest score, even though I'm sure Keith Elwin on his first ball in a tournament has probably beat that. I'm not going to lie. Okay. But the good news is about the entire adventure is that there's the gentleman's at the door right now, just dropping off a package. Sorry, guys. Elwin, relax. It's okay. Hey, no problem. Enjoy. Have a good day. So we left some chips outside for the delivery guy. So he just held up the bag of All Dressed. I don't think they have those in America. All Dressed is like barbecue, sweet and sour vinegar. Thanks for the package. He came on the deck and then dropped off the packages, but then we have a sign out there with a box. Anyways, that's a nice thing you can do, especially if you live way out in the sticks in the country. It's a nice thing you can do for a delivery driver is to just like, because man, how they're getting slammed. Even I think of my good buddy Graham Murtaugh there in Kitchener, and he's getting slammed because he's having to work like 12 to 14 hour, like, you know, Saturday, Sundays and stuff like that. Delivery drivers are getting slammed right now. Thank you so much. Epic Beard, by the way, I don't assume that you listen to my show. They were in an Enterprise rental truck, so I don't even know what that just got delivered. And unless my name's on that package, I can't open it up because it's Christmas. But let's get back to the percentages. So with my left flipper on Fireball Classic, oh, if someone knows someone who's beat 7 million on Fireball Classic, let me know. It's a very common game. It's out there often. I would like to hear if someone has ever, you know, beat that. I know people have. I just would like to know if anyone's actually rolled it over the 10 million. That is a new thing. I'm going to start like daily between now and, I don't know, Christmas and probably whenever I get a new pinball machine, I'm going to start attempting to, because I want to double roll that. And I might even start using all of my streaming software and start putting my stuff up on YouTube. Because I was like, if I can't be on Twitch right now, I can at least upload very short, very small, like 5-minute videos to YouTube maybe. Because my modem's so crappy, right? So I might start doing that. But percentage-wise, like just off the top of my head, if I'm thinking about my left flipper on Fireball Classic, if I want to, from a cradle, backhand it into the lock shot or whatever, the furthest back lock shot, I know in my head it's about 10%. But if I want to hit the captive ball, it's around 15%. I don't know precisely. I'm not like, oh, it's 11.7 degrees to the, you know, and I'm not checking the wind ahead of time or anything else like that. It's not quite that specific, but I know in my head that it's right around this percentage. And this will tie into my third tip for you, okay? And I don't know if you'll get anything from these. I'm just a weird, strange dude. And maybe these are things that helped me. Maybe none of them help you. Maybe one of them help you. Again, if you're in the top like 100 in the world or even probably 1,000, you don't need these tips. They, in fact, might make your game worse. I don't know. This is for anyone who's listening to the show that just would like to maybe be a little more accurate. And these are things that I found to help me. So this is the top one. And this one I do think that a lot of pinball players do. I incorporate sighting and my percentages stuff to this third one. I've heard pinball commentators talk about this a little. This is the later than or earlier than. So I call it the ETT or LTT. And basically it's the, is it later than that or earlier than that? So for instance, a very, very important shot on say Kiss is Gene Simmons' mouth. And you need to know precisely where on the flipper from a cradle on the right flipper you can backhand it into Gene Simmons' mouth. It's like twice as safe to backhand it directly up into Gene Simmons' mouth as it is to shoot it from the left flipper. When you shoot from the left flipper, if you miss, it has side-to-side motion. Also, I find it far harder to hit the targets on the either side of Gene Simmons' mouth to relight your lock. So it's very good to know, okay, if I hit it right here on the flipper from a cradle, I need to go earlier than that to hit it on the stand-up on that side of the lock, or I need to go slightly earlier. So just for fun sometimes, when I know that I need to hit it in the middle, I'll purposely try to hit it onto the left side of the middle or the right side of the middle. Because it's such a big target so close to your flippers, learning to be precise with that shot really comes in handy, especially if the operator has it set up hard or you get to the point that you have to start hitting them X number of times before you can even lock it in Gene's mouth, right? So anyways, later than or earlier than, right? So every time you're hitting it, and this will really, really help you as well with repeatable shots. So I'm thinking most recently on Ghostbusters I played a couple weeks ago. You know, when I'm trying to hit that left ramp, if I've got to get my super jackpots, you really need to keep saying, okay, I keep hitting the left orbit. So I'm hitting it too late when it's on the fly. And you need to distinguish, because hitting something on the fly is much, much, much harder than hitting something from a cradle. So it's one thing to be able to hit that left orbit all the time, but there is a lot of ramps that if you hit from a cradle, they won't get to the top, or there's less chance they'll get to the top. So there's a massive advantage right there to learn how to be accurate while you're actually like on the fly. Like being accurate while you're on the fly is, you know, that's the difference between a probably, you know, top tier player and like me. Because on the fly, my accuracy sucks. It's horrible. I'm getting better at it. I am getting better at it. And I am getting better at it when the ball's coming back down through any type of in lane or through a guide, especially coming back from a ramp when it's almost guaranteed to typically be at the same speed every single time, depending on if you have metal ball guides or if it's a plastic ramp or the condition. And there's a couple other variances, how it comes down into the out lane or in lane as it would be. Anyways, so that's the number one that I think other people have used. Like, okay, I can just keep hitting that shot. And I've talked about this before, where if you have a shot you're bad at, like getting through the pops on a Keith Elwin game, especially, I don't even care if you're paying for it on location. Spend a good 10 minutes and one entire game, you know, just repeatedly hitting that shot whenever it gets on the correct flipper. You say, oh, on the other flipper, I can shoot it whatever I want and do this and that and the other. Now, of course, there's times when you change that. Oh, you're one shot away from Chaos Multiball. You're not going to, you know, when you're shooting for the S on Chaos Multiball, you're not going to keep going for that hard shot through the pops because you need to hit that right after it, right? But if you just spend an entire ball just going for that hard shot, especially from the hardest flipper, you will eventually get back it. You'll eventually do it. The other thing I will encourage you not to do, this is just a side tip, don't ever think you can't backhand a shot. Don't ever think you can't hit a shot. A shot's too wide out and you can't hit it off the end of your flipper. because you're forgetting about other things like ball spin, which can change the ball while it's actually on the play field. You're also forgetting about, much more importantly, that when you're cradled up, you can kind of hit the ball back up into the lane by with a light tap of the flipper, and then the ball can actually roll up onto your flipper, allowing you to backwards hit shots that usually are very, very, very dangerous. So some of the most dangerous shots, if not the most dangerous shots, are the drop targets on the left in The Walking Dead. And if you can do what I call a roll up, I don't know what the real term is. I don't know if Steve Bowden has it on the Fun with Bonus pinball dictionary or not. Shout out to Steve, by the way. Glad to see it looks like things with Raza are moving on and they're actually going to be getting sold. And it looks like hopefully we see these things getting made. And from the last video I got to see on Deep Root that Steve went over the rules, go check that out on deeproot.com, by the way. If you haven't, it was really cool. I'm even more, every single time we get to learn a little bit more about Raza, I'm a little bit more sold on Steve was the right guy to help implement the rules. I mean, I never had to be sold on that. As long as these games are produced and they get out the door, again, Goonies is the only title they had there that had a chance of getting my money. Food Truck, I would walk up and play. And a couple of the other ones, I'm going, yeah, I don't know. Maybe, maybe, maybe the Whitewater 2 if it was done right by Dennis Nordman or whatever. But anyways, let's get back to the task at hand here because we still have to talk about that pinball machine we're going to be giving away at the end here. The next thing on this list is repetition. And this is the most boring one on the list, but I kind of alluded to that earlier, but you've got to just keep trying to hit that shot. And once you learn a shot on a pinball machine, stop shooting it for a while, especially if you're trying to get a higher score on it, right? Because we all have those shots that we love and that they're easy and that we can do, and we can do them all day long. And they might even get you a lot of points. But learning the hard shots on that machine will teach you how to do the hard shots on each and every single solitary machine. And once you get more and more confidence with shooting different machines, right? It's basically all these skills are going to transfer over. Just like the skills that I had from being fairly decent at pool for a while. And believe me, I was not that good. I was okay. I did win one tournament at Cheap Charlie's back in the day. Shout out to all the Londoner listeners. Shout out to all of them because they probably remember Cheap Charlie's, but I won a tournament there where in between playing each round of pool, if I destroyed my the person I was playing quick enough, I would run over and play either Buck Buck Hunter or the one pinball machine in the corner in really bad shape. So that was a fun night. But pool was from my latter days. And yes, some people did call me a pool nerd or a snooker nerd because I actually had a glove, which I wore on my left hand because I started shooting pool when I was so young. I was so small. I was knee high to a grasshopper, as they say. And I was so young that when I was at my own Opus House and I was playing pool, I could just barely, my eyes could just barely see the edge. And that's why I've always liked to do a lot of sighting with any other sport I played in the future, including ping pong. Yes, you didn't hear incorrectly, not pinball, ping pong. I was part of the London Ping Pong Club, or at least I was for a little bit of time until the guy told me I wasn't very good and I probably shouldn't come back. But I was part of it for a short period of time and I played some of the best ping pongers. He did tell my good buddy Pete Chapman, who tried out for the team with me. He said, but you have potential and you should continue to come back. And he did that in like the Mr. Miyagi voice. He was a very like cool like Asian dude who happened to be incredible at ping pong. And his ping pong racket was square and he held it downwards. But it was, you know, anyways, he was awesome. He was really cool. He destroyed me, I think, like 15-0. He maybe beat Pete like 15-3. And he was basically like, yeah, so maybe go back to pinball? No, he didn't say that. Anyways, going back to it here, the fifth and final thing that I will say is that you need to implement into your game playing on the fly more. And I'm not talking about just playing on the fly, like the ball's coming down, and instead of cradling it or doing a ski jump over to cradle the ball and slowing the ball down so you have more control to get a higher score. It's very useful to not do that once you know all the shots on the machine. Once you know all the shots on the machine from a cradle, it's extremely useful to causing you to become a better pinball player to learn all those shots, not only on the fly, but especially out of, say, a scoop. Because it's one thing to be able to do a dead bounce off of a scoop and cradle up, which you can do on a lot of games. It's a whole other thing to be able to do a live catch and cradle up, and now you've got it on that flipper. Of course, you can always just post pass and do either of those. But it's a whole other thing to be able to do misdirection. And this is perhaps the most advanced of all of these that I'm talking about, or at least for me, it was the hardest thing for me to learn. And that is changing the angle that the ball is going on, especially when it's coming out of a consistent area, because trying to figure out the angle of the ball coming out of just like out of the pops when it's always going to be coming out slightly different, or from way up high on the play field when it's not coming from an orbit. From an orbit, it should come fairly similar. So again, learning those angles. But there is several machines that I have rented over the years from Mike Dimas. Shout out, Mike. Shout out. Sorry, I did it wrong. And oh, by the way, many of you know Mike Dimas, but some of you don't. His YouTube channel, he's putting up videos of him playing rare and fun machines and fixing. Some of them are about fixing. Some of them are gameplay. Go over and check out Mike Dimas on YouTube. I believe it's just under that, but if not, I'll do a correction in a future episode. But I'm pretty sure it's that. And Mike, you can show me out. Let me know if I'm wrong. But he's been putting up a lot of really cool, interesting videos. So, and I sometimes I watch them and go, oh, they should have more views than that. So here's my little shout out to my old local buds who, now that the vaccine's out, I'll get to go back visit soon. Because I'm not going to lie, I might have been being a little crusty recently, and I'm missing tournament pinball. I'm missing my friends back home. And right now I'm especially missing my family back home. And all of that is partially part of an excuse, I suppose, just to say that as this episode comes to a close, I want to give a more sincere and better apology to Mr. Zach Menny of Flippin' Out Pinball, and of course, the Pinball Show at TPN, and many other things. I was very, very, very annoyed and pissed off with myself for screwing up my opportunity at TPN. I think that my mental state has been negatively affected by COVID and being locked up here in this province and having no pinball machines to play and no tournaments. However, that's not a good excuse for what I did. I considered Zach a friend and I lashed out and said some not cool stuff about him on a show ago. Two shows ago and a show ago, I gave him a less than sincere apology. So this is my much more sincere apology. I don't always agree with Zach, but I should have reached out to him personally instead of attacking him in the show. And for that, I apologize. If the whole singing thing is 100% a shtick, you and Dennis deserve the Twippy. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. But to me, in my head, it's like I thought that like Dennis was really getting frustrated about it. But I didn't reach out to Dennis and ask him about that, and I should have. And I didn't reach out to you and ask him about that, and I should have. And I was having a particularly hard day. And when I listened to the episode, I thought for sure that you were coming at me with one of the comments you made, which I'm not even going to bring up again. But then I thought for sure when you didn't even mention that I had left the network that you were even razzing me further, which you probably weren't. You just didn't want to mention it because why? And I shouldn't have got upset about either of those things. And what I can tell you, Zach, and what I can tell everyone at TPN, who I may have disappointed, and I feel like if I did any of you guys, I'm sorry, that's not the part of me that I like. That's the part of me that is a douchebag. I was a douchebag. You heard it here first. Pinball Nerds Podcast exclusive. I am a douchebag. I am a jerk. I am a loser sometimes. And I was acting like a douchebag, jerk, loser. And I had no right to say that, especially if it's a 100% shtick, which, according to Zach, it is. So from here on forth, I am saying this. I don't give a crap if my numbers drop in half. I don't care if they go down to none. I'm not calling out Jack Dangers ever again. If, you know, if he wants to do whatever, it's not my place. I'm not going to call out Zach if I think he's kind of like, you know, being annoying with going on about the sing thing too much. I'm not going to call out, I'm not even going to do rankings anymore. If I'm not going to say like, oh, because I know Franchi was a little upset that I ranked him as seventh. That's just how I was feeling then. I don't actually think it's like the seventh worst or best podcast. I just, at the time when I wrote the list of how excited I get to hear a podcast come on the air, that was my honest truth. That was my honest, unfiltered truth. The problem about unfiltered truths is You disappoint everyone else. And I even realized after I did my top 20 list, you forgot Lauren Gray. I don't know where Lauren Gray would be on that list. I suspect definitely on the list. I don't know where I should have put Backbox. I love Backbox. I listen to almost every episode. I've had friends on Backbox. I appreciate everything Lauren does. And I left her out. And then I go, well, you also left out like Meltdown, the Meltdown Pinball Podcast, the only other pinball podcast on Anchor. Now, I know that Steve Bowden doesn't do much on that podcast anymore, but I love that one. I also missed out on the Canadian Pinball Podcast, but I'm just going to go the high road and I'm not going to mention. Now, like, let's say there's a Keith Elwin. Keith Elwin goes on to Loser Kid Pinball for like the 60th time in 62 episodes or something like that. I can mention it. I can say, oh, you know, Keith was asked this question about his game. And I will reference it, but I'm not going to have opinions on shows anymore. I don't want to. That was, you guys bookmark it. I don't think I'm going to delete it. And screw it. Don't go back and listen. If you haven't listened to the top 20 most rad pinball podcasts, I'm not calling out most rad people in pinball anymore. I don't want to do that stuff anymore. I thought I wanted to. And the whole time I just felt ew and dirty and yucky. When I talk about like my top five first impressions of Rick and Morty from Spooky, that episode has almost 300 listens. And for that, I'm very grateful. But that episode, I didn't say anything negative or rude about anybody. I just gave you my honest opinion on Rick and Morty. And when pinball machines come out in the future, I'm going to give you my open and honest, unfiltered opinion of them. But I'm not going to go off the charts talking about rumors or, you know, that's just not the way I do things. You guys already know that. But I also don't really want to be the guy who calls out manufacturers. However, from time to time, I think that that's more fair than calling out pinball podcasters, because pinball podcasters are paid $0.00. And for all their hard work, they end up sometimes getting ridiculed and criticized unfairly. And I'm one of the people who does that. I don't want to be part of it anymore. I'm in nobody's top five list. I started this podcast as a fucking joke, okay? I am a joke. This show's a joke. This show is meant to be the SNL of pinball podcasts. This show started out as trying to be more like kind of sort of what like Macho is, or even maybe you'd say Top Rope, where they're kind of a farce. Now, Macho says a lot of things that I take to heart and that I think he's tongue-in-cheek being serious about. But if I'm going to call someone out, I'm going to do it in a really nice, funny way, or just not do it anymore. I don't want to do it. But if I don't call people out negatively, I also can't call out people as well, as much, as often in a good way. And that means I'm going to lose some listeners, but I'll gain some others. And the listeners I lose from not talking drama ever will hopefully be made up from the people who will come back to my show and who loved my show before and said, yeah, but this guy never talked drama. And now he does. I got sucked in. I suck because I got sucked in. And so Zach Manny, I'm giving you Sing Along. Now, I know it's only an $800 machine. And I know it doesn't near make up for me being a big jerk, because money's only money. And frankly, to you, $800 is probably a lot less than it is to me. However, I know you're a man that values money. And more importantly, you value friendship. And I know that it'll probably be a long time in the future until we can be friendly again. And I kind of frigged up any chance of that happening. However, I'm not always going to agree with what Zach says or does, but I should have reached out to him personally before saying anything on my show. And I'm losing my voice partially because I'm choking up a little bit, but also partially because I've had a long day of podcasting and talking to people online, and I got to go off and have some coffee and tea. But Zach, I don't like you all the time, but I still love you. And I think overall, you're very good for pinball. And I want this show to serve pinball. But I will no longer serve the beast that is the egotistical jerk that's in my head that wants to like criticize other pinball podcasts. I just don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to rank live streams anymore. I don't want to talk about people in media anymore. I don't want to do it. I will be critical of pinball companies and pinball machines. I don't want to be critical of pinball people. That's not my place. That's not the part of those aren't my favorite shows. Those aren't the shows I like. And those aren't the shows that I want to hear messages from people that they're upset and I wreck their day. Okay. So here's the thing. I am sorry. I am genuinely sorry. Not just only to Zach, but also I know to Franchi, to Kaneda, to Jack Danger, to probably a longer list of people who I haven't mentioned and were waiting for a shout out from my show, maybe about a stream, or maybe why haven't I invited you on the show? And for that, I'm sorry. I want to move out from here and I want to become more of an interview show. I think I did a good job with Tim Lee and Glenn the Skateboarder. Moving forward, having people on the show, I don't even want to talk about media either. So anyways, Zach, your sing-along is here. You have for 6 months, 6 months from when the borders open to pick it up, or I'm going to give it away to another listener. Until next time, Pinball Nerds, don't be like me and be garbage. Just be happy when it rains or snows. Until next time, Pinball Nerds, remember to eat, sleep, and breathe pinball.